Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and a banana skin on my catwalk. It's David Vitti.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, that's a good one, isn't it? The old banana skin.
You like that, do you? I can imagine you on a catwalk because, can I just say, Jason, I mean, you are looking particularly attractive today. No, I mean, you're not necessarily my type, but I think credit where credit's due. I just think aesthetically and visually, you look a dream today. And it's only fitting, really, that you do, and you have made that extra effort, because I think it would be only appropriate, bearing in mind today's guest.
I've been in the bathroom all morning. I've got various products on my skin. And I've got, so I think they call it a bit of mousse in my hair.
Sure.
And but amusingly, I've got a nice shirt on, but I've got shorts on.
And me, look.
Look, I'm dressed from the top up.
Hang on, they're not shorts, they're underpants.
No, they're not, they're shorts, look.
Tell you what.
So anyway, our guest today. Well, he's a gentleman, actually, who's at the top of his tree in his chosen profession. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly, the most famous male model that this country has ever produced, if that's an expression, as well as being the founder and creative director of his own clothing range. When it comes to style and fashion, there's not many blokes that put myself and you, Dave, in the shade. Mm-hmm. But this bloke does on every occasion. It is, of course, the one and only Mr. David Gandy. How are you, mate?
Thank you. I'm wondering where I would buy a pair of those shorts. I feel like I'm quite clued up on the fashion through, but I'm not sure where I'd go to buy a pair of those.
Down on the south of France, obviously.
Obviously.
Is that where you got them, Jason? Did you get them on the Côte d'Azur?
Yes, I did. At the very famous sexy little town where everything goes on.
I mean, they do look a little bit like underpants, but I would imagine that in the south of France, maybe they're more acceptable than...
Do you know what? They go and treat down there. They're not so good in Hampshire, let me tell you that.
I'd say go for it, mate. If you've got the confidence to pull that off, mate, then all the better.
Exactly, exactly. David, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for being here. Jason wanted me to ask you an initial question because he's too shy to do it himself, in terms of how you deal with being an international style icon, as he really struggles with the attention and pressure at times, as you can see from his short guards.
Oh goodness, guys, how I deal with it, not quite sure really. I've been fortunate enough to really I've never had a stylist in my life. I've been in the industry, the fashion industry, for 20 years and among the best creatives and stylists, and so hopefully I've picked something up and really I've just dressed according to how I want to dress, and people sometimes seem to like it. And I've just always tried to be a slight individual, but I don't do anything that's beyond the means of anyone, really. I mean, I wear good essentials. If I look at anyone in the world, it's or look in the past of who I want to aspire like, it's people like Steve McQueen and Paul Newman, like we all do. Yeah, and if you know anything about those guys, is they wore a t-shirt, a pair of chinos, and probably a Belstar or a Barber, and that was about it. And that's because they were. And that's because they were racing cars or motorbikes most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I can honestly say I've got one of those boxes ticked, but only one. Hey, so look, here's a question for you. And I guess all guys, young and old, will be wondering, what the hell must it have been like to be David Gandy as like a 17-year-old? What must it be like?
As a 17-year-old?
Yeah, so like, just coming to your...
That was 17. If you saw me at 17, that was not my prime, believe me. That was, I think I paid my dues in life. I sort of went through a bit of a, shall I call it, puppy fat stage where I kind of grew out and not up. And then suddenly one day I woke up when I was about 17, 18, and I'd grown to about just over 6'2". And then had to sort of fill out a bit, really. So I was that sort of, never scrawny, but that kind of like later teenager, lean kind of feel. And was never particularly happy with the way I looked, I have to say. And then that's why I sort of hit the gym and trained and and got to where I wanted to be, really, like with training, and got my body to how I wanted it.
And me and Dave can relate to that. We've had that struggle, haven't we, Dave?
Joking aside, though, David, I mean, how did it happen? How did you know, we all go through these funny stages of sort of growing out and up and out and up and out and up. But how did you get spotted somewhere? Were you in regular, ordinary life and somebody spotted you and thought?
One housemate of mine entered me for a modeling competition on This Morning with Richard and Judy. I knew nothing about it. And Select Model Agency, who are still my agency today, called me up and said, you know, you're down to the last 10. And I said, thanks a lot. I thought it was a prank. I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I put the phone down. And then that evening, I was talking to Abby, my housemate, and said, weird conversation today with someone pretending to be from Select Model Agency. And she was like, no, I put you in for a competition. And I went from there. And I hated university. The thing I say, the only thing I learned from university was that I shouldn't have gone to university, and spent most of the time racing it down. I was in Gloucestershire University in Cotswolds, and spent most of the time racing around my 106 GTI around the lanes and keeping that clean, to be honest. So, and then before that, to be honest, I had a year out, and I thought, what do I want to go and do? I'm like such a passionate in cars, I wrote to. Auto Express magazine. So can I have a
I've read about this. Is this true that you used to deliver the cars which were going on test about all sorts of sexy stuff?
Like I stayed, Jane, for like a week, and then they said, look, listen, David, like do you know all the guys are going, it's during the summer, all the guys going on holiday, do you want to be paid 50 quid a day and deliver all the test cars to the test track? It was like someone had given me the dream job at 18 or 17, and I was like, So, and I should have stuck to that. If I'm totally honest, I mean, I was being paid 50 quid a day and driving, Subaru Imprezas, the RB5 coming out. I remember when, the Cayman or the Boxer had just come out at that point. And they were like, David, take the Jag XJR out, and that needs to go over to Millbrook. And then I just used to join what the test drivers are like. So I just used to sit in the back of the cars being thrown around. And they thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious. And that's how I spent my time. Then stupidly went to university. luckily got out of there, got into the fashion game, and then tried to turn that around to driving as many cars as I could in the fashion game. So really where I've gone.
Okay, all right. So listen, I mean, we're going to go off script very slightly here, because actually we were going to ask you about your clothing range. Let's do that at the end, because I think we're on to the car bit now. So okay. I'm getting the impression straight away that obviously this was very much an original childhood passion of yours. Talk to us about the earliest childhood memories. Where does the love with the motor car begin for you?
Well, see, first you have to understand that no one else in my family is interested in cars as much as me. I don't know where it's come from. Like, absolutely nowhere.
And that's unusual, to be fair. You know, sorry to interrupt, but, you know, normally when we talk to people, it's normally sort of been passed down, normally from dad, you know.
Yeah, no, my dad is brilliant at finance, and he just sort of always worked out at how much cars are going to cost, really. That's element to them. I always joke, I could turn up in a yellow Lamborghini Countach on the driveway, and he could be on the drive and see me and not comment on the car. I could leave in a yellow Vauxhall Nova. He wouldn't say anything. He would not notice that they are two different cars. Apart from the only thing he says to me to this day is that I had a few offs in my time.
And me
one
too.
Of them I had to call my dad, and I ended up in a bit of a grassy bank. The wrong way up, and had to call my dad to come and help me push the car back over and get it going again. And to this day, I will leave the house. I'm 42 now, by the way. Sorry, 43. My dad will say, "All right, David, see you later. Mind the grassy banks." I did that when I was 17. Every time, because shakes my hand. Mind those grassy banks. I'm like, every time.
So that's in the family at all. That's amazing, isn't it, Dave?
And I just anything with cars, you don't kind of realize, guys, really. It's just, I always had a car magazine. I think even before I could read, I was looking at cars. I had my model cars. I didn't really have bikes. I had pedal go-karts. So I just remember the pedal go-karts with a handbrake. And just that was my life, just doing handbrake turns in my go-kart. And yeah, and that didn't end. And then finally you do get a car with a handbrake, and then you're just doing handbrake turns in your Ford Fiesta 1.1 gear. And, you know, that's where kind of the passion went from there.
So was that the first car then, the Fiesta?
Yeah, I had a hand-me-down from one of my dad's companies. It was a 10-year-old Ford Fiesta 1.1 gear.
That was what? What,
you remember
what
the registration?
It was an
they
E.
They might know it.
It was an E, a 1988. I can't remember what the registration was. And I'm still wondering what the gear was about, because it didn't seem to have many extras on it. So, yeah, so that it started from there. And then, so obviously, being that petulant teenager, older teenager, said to my dad about having a better car. And my dad, which actually is very sensible now that I'm a dad, my dad said, you know, David, you are more likely to have an accident in the first year than any other time. So I'm not going to put you in any remotely powerful car ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saved some money up, and then, kind of finally convinced him, and went out, got a, and then me and my sister, we both shared a Peugeot 106 XSI. I mean, it's how you learn about lift off oversteer. Did a bit of hedge trimming for Essex County Council in my time, but that's how you learn. And and then sort of went progressed from there. But then my father's a, you know, I can't remember. My daughters call my granddad, they couldn't say granddad, so they call him Gaga. And it's absolutely the perfect name for him, Gaga. So once I sort of sat there and he was reading the Times on Sunday morning, and there was a picture of the Audi TT concept car. He said, "That's nice, isn't it?" I went, "Wow, we're talking about cars. Absolutely, yes, that's lovely, Dad. That's smash." He went, "Yeah, okay. See if you can go and import one, can you?" And that was it.
No way.
And he sent me off to go and see if you could get one for him and Mum. And yeah, it was a time. Do you remember the time when it was cheaper to import from Europe and to get the right? We picked it up from, I think it was Aachen in Germany. And it was very weird. So me and Dad went over. We flew over. We picked up. It was one like the first TTs to be brought back into the UK.
A left hooker.
No, a right.
No, right.
I was a right hooker, so it was a proper right grey import.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that the French were on strike at the time, as per usual. But my dad had, so the queues for the tunnel, the queues for the ferries were terrible. But my dad had invested in the Channel Tunnel. So he was like this shareholder, I don't know what you got, he took some sort of pass or something. So they sort of saw his, they went, "Oh, Mr. Gurney, how are you?" And we were in this Audi TT that no one had seen. They sort of guided us past like the queue straight onto the train. And it was a nice memory. And we had the Audi TT that was handed back, that was handed down to me. So I had the Audi for a while, and then I started working with Jaguar Land Rover, I'm still working with them to this day.
Because you did the Mille Miglia, didn't you, in Italy?
I've done the Mille Miglia twice. Yeah, yeah, Jason. Wow. Yeah. So that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun. Nothing compared to anything that you've done, but if you get, I did it with Yasmin Le Bon 1 year, and she's great, rallying timing, very very accurate. And then I did it with Jody Kidd, and Kidd is slightly unhinged. Hell of a peddler of a car though, and I don't think I hang around. So that year was pretty.
She's as mad as a box of frogs, isn't she?
She is. We had a lot of people that didn't like us in the middle.
Is that right?
Usually because we were overtaking them. But there you go.
We want to get Jody on this podcast. So can you have a little word with her, please? Because we've tried for the last couple of years and we've just not managed to work it out, have we, JP?
No. I mean, she said yes, but she's all over the place.
Driving cars,
handbraking turns, doing all sorts of bad stuff. Yeah. I'm hoping.
Love Jodes, absolutely great. And we did the Mille, and then I built actually a car for, I built a, with Jaguar Classics, I built a XK 1954 XK 120.
Wow.
Fully restored. And then, so we built that for the Mille, but we built it in 2019. And of course, the pandemic then hurt. And But then we got the offer that the Mille Mille was licensed out to the UAE for the first time last year. And so I shipped the car over, and me and my best friend, Charlie T, also the MD of my company, we did the Mille out in the UAE, doing all the seven Emirate states.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very different to, of course, Italy, but just as fun, really, really fun.
Sand everywhere.
Yeah.
I hope you took lots of what's that cream you put on baby's bum?
Savlon.
I hope you took loads of that.
I'm never without my Savlon.
Good lad.
I mean, those shorts of yours would be full of it at the moment, JP. You know, I mean, honestly, it'd be like a bunker down there.
Oh dear God.
You were talking, before about the TT, David. I mean, what an iconic kind of style in terms of motoring that was. I mean,
good car, mate, to be honest. I mean, the Bauhaus? Was it the Bauhaus kind of design? It was a shame, actually, that because I remember that going back to like the journalistic thing, when I was at Auto Express, Oliver Marriage was there. I don't know if you know Ollie, he was a journalist there and a test driver.
Don't know.
And we were testing the Boxer versus TT at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Oliver, I was in the passenger seat with Oliver, and I remember this drive, like in the passenger seat, this new TT. And I mean, it was a privilege to be in, you know, when you're with a great driver, it's a privilege to be in the car. But I remember thinking, fucking hell, like we are absolutely flying down this road.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Not being scared whatsoever, but just like impressed. And then years later, I was going to be invited to car launches. I saw Oliver, and I went, "Hi, Ollie." And he went, "David." Like, didn't put two and two together. And then I said to him, "I said, do you remember scaring an intern at Auto Express on in a TT?" And he went, "Was that you?" I went, "Yeah, that was me."
really? He hadn't made the connection,
and didn't make it at all. So, it was nice to sort of get back, and we had a laugh about it, and the times we had there as well, a very short time after.
That test, Boxer versus TT, was one of the all time classic head to heads, wasn't it?
And that was a TT before they put all the rear spoiler and the ESP on, because people were, and actually they were quite decent handling cars, and they just people just had to make them, you know, a little bit safer, I suppose. But I remember at the time, even the Boxer at that point, they wanted the typical get the car out of shape coming around the corner shot. And we just couldn't. I remember it just like the speeds that the test drivers were having to get this Boxer get out of shape around the corner. Shape, getting that point that if it went wrong, it was going to go really wrong.
Mm.
But I remember that bit, thinking what hell of a car the Boxer was. And TT was. I was always very fond of the TT, if I'm telling you.
Like you said, Dave, iconic car.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a friend of mine actually had one recently. The friend of mine, he sort of swaps his cars every kind of couple of years, but he had one as a little weekend toy. And he kind of goes, "Do you know what?" He goes, "I'm going to trade it in and get something else." And I said, "Don't." I said, "It's not worth that much money. Just keep hold of it because it's an absolute classic and it can only go up." Anyway, he didn't listen and he shifted it. But I just think it was a big mistake, because when you've got something like that, as you say, I think that car will always look good. I think in 50 years' time, that will look really, really special.
It will do. I think actually, especially if you got one of the ones that hadn't been the original ones that don't have the spoiler and don't have the ESP on, I think they will be worth something one day, Dave. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's a daily drive then, Dave?
If the missus doesn't take it, I've got a this is kind of how it's worked out. I work with Jaguar, and I've had every Jaguar, very fortunate to have every Ian Callum, as I call them, Ian Callum Jaguars.
Ugly Ian.
The favorite being the XKRS, which I keep looking at in the ads now, thinking maybe I should, because that was my favorite car.
Yeah, I love those.
So I've got a F-Pace SVR.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a hell of a car. I have to say, like an incredible, incredible car. And I never thought I'd say that about an SUV. And then I've got an E-Pace, and then we've got a Jaguar E-Pace hybrid. And the missus roars off in the V8. And
knew it. I knew that was going to be the case.
Yeah, without even asking. Just
straight to Waitrose.
toot around London in my little wee pace. And I don't mind. Guys, I've always kind of said in some ways I don't actually sound. I love driving. I don't really care what I drive. I know it does make a difference. And it's nice to get out and then get back into something. So I get back into the F-pace. Because I try and convince myself. Like, I don't need the V8. I don't need 540 brake horsepower. And
You do.
That's not just, yeah. I tried to be sensible once with Jaguar. They were, that sweet spot in the F-type. And I was like, I don't need the 500 brake horsepower V8. I'll go for the 3 litre V8. Within like 2 weeks, I called them up. I was like, I'm going to need the V8.
You see, I think at the moment, I think because we are very much on the verge of all driving electric cars, very, very soon, and the world is converting. We know that. And it's a conversation that we often have on here. I think that that makes us, or certainly makes me, even more likely to drive something which is big and grunty and makes a noise. It almost sort of while we still can, because I almost feel like this is our last window.
Yeah, I don't know where we're going to go. I don't think. The Europeans now are having an R, aren't they? The Germans and the Italians sort of said might not be possible anymore, and looking at synthetic fuels. Which actually, there was a guy on the Mille Miglia who's in. He's a founder of, I think it's called P1 Fuels, which will be fueling F1, I think, in 2025. And this is synthetic fuel, carbon neutral fuel.
Yeah.
And to me, guys, there is, it's just dismissed by the British government. But, as he said, you could get, if with mass distribution, with mass production of this, which could be done anywhere around the world using solar and taking carbon out the air. Well, why, having vehicles that a bit, like batteries, a bit like the hybrid, which could be, could be battery and could be on P1 fuels. Is that not the answer we're all kind of looking for in some ways? You wouldn't have to worry about the biggest problem with electric, and I've tried them. We've got the hybrid in London. It's still the infrastructure and charging it.
Yeah.
Really, really difficult. Yeah.
And that's never going to be joined up completely, is it?
No. And as you say, and all the infrastructure is there for sort of fuel, whether it's sort of traditional fuel or synthetic fuel. It's all sort of set up everywhere around the world.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll have to see if they're. I mean, it seems that Audi and Porsche are the ones that are pushing that good old Porsche. They seem to be the ones to see if they can get that to work, really.
Because just recently, Jaguar have announced that all of their future cars will be electric, haven't they?
I've seen them. I've been very fortunate. Yeah, I actually got showed. Showed the concepts the other day. Actually,
you're up at Gaydon.
I was up at Gaydon,
yeah. So, you know what? I was up there many, many years ago when JLR were looking at buying Silverstone, and I was on the board of the BRDC, and we went up to Gaydon, and they took us into their full-size clay room, where they've got the clay. And I said to the guy, I forget his name now, he's a bigwig, I said, can I have a go at that? And he went... Right, and what one of the engineers who was doing a bit of scraping, I said, let's have a go at that. I put a line in the side of it. I mean, it was fine because they buffed it out or they filled it up. I'm like, oh Jesus, I expected it to be quite hard, but it was pretty soft. It's an amazing place, that, isn't it, up there?
Jason, are you sure that wasn't BMW? Because that their designs at the moment look like...
and stuck his two big fat fingers through the grill at the front.
Kicked his face in. That's what's happened, hasn't it? God, do you know what? That's interesting you mentioned that. They're bloody ugly now, aren't they, BMWs? Mm.
It's the new 7 Series. I love some of the BMW designs. And actually, like the new M3, M4, I think I've actually probably got used to it. And I was probably a bit critical when they came out. But that new 7 Series, that's an ugly dog of a car. It really, really is. Like, I really can't understand that whatsoever. And it's, that's these things now. Like, we're looking at Ian Callum, who I know very well. It's like the designs of his cars, like the XJ, or the XK and the XJ, but the XK, I still look at and think, still one of the best looking cars on the road.
Absolutely.
It is such a good looking car. And his designs just seem to, over time get better and better.
That's some skill, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a massive skill, isn't it? Absolutely massive skill. But I mean, Jaguar at the moment, see what they're doing. I think it's the extremities of what they're doing, because I just think that brand's tried to be reestablished so many times now that they've got to just go almost, so far left or so far right, whatever way, and completely, which is a new brand. And I totally sort of agree with what they're doing. It has to go to those extremes. But it'd be interesting to see. Well, it will certainly be controversial what they're doing, I think, like the design wise and stuff. But it was a proper wow factor when I saw what they were doing.
Here's a question. And we ask all of our guests this, and it's we me and Dave always believe that music and cars go really well together.
Yeah.
So if you could have a fantasy drive, bearing in mind, I'm sure you've seen some amazing locations where when you've been away doing your modeling stuff. Where are you driving? And importantly, what are you in and what are you listening to?
It would have to be Italy, Jane, because I still think I think they understand people like us, should I say. And they're still very, very car passionate. And so it would have to be Italy. I was going to say maybe the Amalfi Coast driving road or through Tuscany and somewhere like that. What would I drive? Oh, dear me. I mean, I love my classics. I've got a 356. I've got the XK120, but...
Can't be a Jag.
You know what? If I'm in Italy and I'm driving how I think I'm going to be driving, I'd probably say Lancer Delta Integrale.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah.
You because see, the elephant one, the little Evo elephant car.
The Evo elephant, I know exactly what it's. Yeah, I mean, I think Jodes has got one of those. I think Jodie Kids is. She's on something at the moment. I think she's got her hands on one.
Has
we
she?
Were talking about it. Yeah, I did one of her shows, and I was like, still want to see. I looked at Lancer Delta Integrale when they were 18 grand, 20 grand, like mad pricing, and I think one was going for about 300 the other day.
Yeah,
I
could what?
So, yeah. Absolutely mad.
See, I had one. I had one of the original ones. Yeah. And it was a Mike Spence. It was a new car, Mike Spence conversion, 300 horsepower on a pot, 185, 300. Had it for 3 weeks. How old would I have been? Late teens? Late teens, 18, and threw it at a tree and wrote the bug off. 3 weeks, I had it. What a not knobhead, eh?
Did you learn not to throw cars into trees anymore?
No. Funny enough, no.
I'd say we live and learn, but probably not.
Made a career out of it.
Absolutely. So, David, what's on the soundtrack then in the Lancia Integrale as you're traversing your way up the Amalfi Coast? Jason sat next to you in the passenger seat with his purple shorts on.
chafing away in his purple shorts and his Savlon.
Full of Savlon.
The smell of Savlon.
Jason, the flying Savlon, as you're driving along the Amalfi Coast.
Oh, the trip's been ruined. the sound of what would I go? I can't think now. What would be the sound? But I mean, anything dry. Like, I feel like I'm quite old school. I was brought up with Motown, soul. Marvin Gaye,
mate. Stop. We're not having Marvin Gaye. If I've got my shorts on, I mean, you're
that's true.
You're leaving that sort of stuff outside.
They want to use sexual healing, Savlon healing, sexual Savlon healing.
That's the song.
So, God, I think the song that shouldn't be on when I'm driving because it does something is anything by AC/DC sometimes. Like that comes on and. Yeah, that's the sort of hell of songs to be driving to.
Listen, I think we're getting the image now. The Amalfi Coast, Jason with his Savlon, some kind of smooth tunes on in the background. David, before we let you go, I need to ask you about the clothing range. Wellwear, talk to us about this because it's more than just clothes, isn't it?
Yes, it's a bit of a world first concept, really, where with I had a range with M&S called Daily Gandhi, which graphed it very well for 6 years, needed to change that narrative. And I sort of set the team about and said, look, there almost has to be, we have to tick a lot of boxes these days if we're starting a new clothing company, sustainability, responsibility. But what else, you know, if we were looking at clothing, is available technically these days? And they told me about, you know, what you can add essentials to. So we came up with well-wearing. It's sort of wellness and apparel met for the first time. So in our T-shirts, we have Wellwear Breathe, which is an antibacterial, anti-odor technology. We have Wellwear Restore, which is an infrared technology. So we're just supplying this to the Jaguar E-Pace racing team as well, because it restores your muscles, increases your blood flow. Wow. When you're wearing them. And yeah, lots of different stuff. So we looked at how we can break that cycle of swimwear being made of polyester, not the most comfortable, not the most breathable. Jason, understand that right now.
Yes, I've long
time. Cotton man.
So we found that
linen.
I thought you were a silk man, to be honest, but
no, it's a bit sweaty. Is silk? But you're fine.
It's a bit slidey on the car seats. That silk. so we were sort of looking at that, and we found a biodegradable enhanced polyester, which breaks down in a couple of years. If clothes end up on a landfill, which they usually do, which is Wellwear Protect. All our pool side and summer stuff is Wellwear Protect, which is UV protectant. And that's where we are. Just everyday essentials that we turned to before, but there were lots of boxes I had to tick. You know, of course, with the responsibility and sustainability and the technical, and it had to be, you know, uber stylish, and it had to last a long time. The quality had to be good. So the team hate me, but we got there. We're doing well, thank you. Not too bad.
Also, it's accessible, isn't it? You know, that's another thing, is I think that people people would naturally assume that it might come, you know, because it's got your name on it and you're the sort of creative director and founder, it might have some silly price tag, but it doesn't though, does it? You know, it is something that you want to get mass market.
No, that's you know, if you're going to do something responsibly and sustainable, we wanted to set a standard to say that the rest of, you know, every other brand could do this as well. Mm. If we can do it and we can sell T-shirts at 30, 35 quid, every other brand can do it that as well. So we are trying to make a difference, as well as just supply a, you know, a great essentials brand for men and women.
Well, do you know what? I'm just looking at the website now, davidgandywellwear.com.
Yeah.
And one thing I've noticed is I think I'd look quite good on your website, actually, particularly in the protect area, which is obviously the swimwear and the shorts. So you've got my number. Give us a shout. I'll get my people to speak to your people. Would you like?
And by the way, when he says his people, he means me. And on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out, mate.
Well, unfortunately, that is it for this week's Fueling Round, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save your money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the devilishly dashing with Savlon, David Gandy.
Thank you, guys. Been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Really, really good to meet you. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Ta-da.